In Genesis chapter 1, we're just going through a bit of an introduction to the study of Genesis. Last week we looked at part 1 of the importance of Genesis. Why is Genesis important? And it's helpful to us to understand this because God gives us a detailed account of creation, and also it gives us a logical explanation for sedimentary rock layers, for fossils, for races, for the languages, and much, much more. The book of Genesis is an extremely important book. And last week we looked at two reasons why it was important. We talked about how Genesis identifies God as the creator of everything, and how significant that is, that God is the only eternal, uncaused cause, and that God created all that he created in 6 literal days. Very important truths to hang on to there from Genesis chapter 1. But then also we looked at the start of the second point, and that is that Genesis is essential to Bible credibility. We looked at the foundational chapters of Genesis chapter 1 to 11 and how God gives us the foundation of things. And so many things were established there that we need as a foundation as we look at things in the rest of the Bible. And I want to pick up from there and continue on. You know, if Genesis is not credible, then we cannot be sure that any of the Bible is credible. You know, if those first chapters of Genesis are a fairy tale, and if we can't really believe what God said when he said he created everything in 6 literal days, then we don't know whether John told the truth when he told about Jesus Christ and the things that he did in the New Testament. So it's very important that we understand this. Henry Morris, in his commentary, made this statement. He said, "The New Testament is, if anything, even more dependent on Genesis than the Old. There are at least 165 passages in Genesis that are either directly quoted or clearly referred to in the New Testament. Many of these are alluded to more than once, so that there are at least 200 quotations or allusions to Genesis in the New Testament." Very important book. To think that 200 times it's quoted or alluded to in the New Testament. So God is telling us that the book of Genesis is extremely important. Just a few examples to just get our thoughts going in that realm. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19 and verse number 4, he says, "And he answered and said unto them, Have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female?" Got that straight from the book of Genesis chapters 1 and 2. And then also in Acts 17:24, "God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands." There in Paul's sermon there on the mount in Corinth, or in Athens, sorry, was bringing back the information from Genesis chapter 1. We find also in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse number 4, "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, hath shined in our hearts to give light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." Again, alluding to Genesis 1 verse 3, where God made light and caused light to shine out of darkness. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 verse 45, it says, "And so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit." Again, taken from Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7. So these, and there's many, many, many more. I mean, we said there's nearly 200 of them like that in the scriptures, but these are just a few to get our thoughts going in that direction. You know, if we cannot take Genesis 1 to 11 literally, then we have no assurance that the rest of the Bible is true. And, you know, there's a lot of people that like to, you know, just say, you know, Genesis, you can't trust the story in Genesis. You can't trust what God said in Genesis. And if that be true, then the rest of our Bible, we don't know whether it's true or not. And so it's very important that we hang on to the truth of the book of Genesis. Now, in Genesis chapter 1 and verse number 1, the very first verse in the Bible, it says, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." Very important verse to start out with. In the beginning. In the beginning. You know, as you think about the beginning, Genesis explains many of the beginnings that we know of today. Many of the beginnings. And science cannot explain the origins. You know, it's important for us to understand that because we're bombarded in our schools and in our media with the idea that evolution is right and that Bible and God is wrong. But yet you look at the dictionary definition of science, and you find that science really doesn't have the credibility to even look at creation and or the origins. Collins English Dictionary defines science as, and I quote, a systemized knowledge derived from observation, study, and experimentation carried on in order to determine the nature and principles of what is being studied, end quote. Now, as you look at that, he says there has to be observation, study, and experimentation. You can't do that with creation, because creation started before anybody was around. We cannot observe it. We cannot reproduce it. We cannot study it in a laboratory. You cannot experiment with it. It's something that happened and no one else was around. And so we have to take that creation or whatever started has to be taken by faith. And so it cannot be a scientific observation. It's important for us to grasp that. And so we conclude that from that, that the beginning cannot be observed, it cannot be repeated, and it can only we can only see what actually exists. Now, science then is not science, or sorry, evolution is not scientific. It is a theory. It is an idea that they've come up with, but it cannot be scientific because they can't put any of these scientific truths to it. It doesn't fit science. And the best best evolution is, at best, evolution is a creation, anti-creation theory. All right? It's an anti-creation theory, a theory to try to denounce what the Bible says, because they don't want to believe what God says, and so there has to be some other answer to it. And evolution really needs to admit that it is a, it's a faith. It is a religion. Evolution is a religion. It is a faith. And all that they take is based on faith. And they get the right to believe that by faith if they want to, but they need to understand that it is by faith. It is not based on facts. Evolutionary theories contradict scientific facts. The scientific fact that everything is decaying. I mean, you don't even need to be a scientist to know that. You buy a car, and in a few years, it's not going to be nearly as good as it was when you bought it. And your house falls apart, and everything we have falls apart. Our clothes wear out. Everything degenerates. That is a fact of the world and a fact of nature. And yet science or evolution says that everything is getting better. And all these accidents made things better, and it made things better, and another explosion, it made it better, and they got better. It doesn't happen. It defies what really happens in life. And so evolution is contradicting what the science actually teaches. Evolution cannot explain the origin of morals, or marriage, or the meaning of life. I can't explain that. If man evolved from slime in the pond, and by unfathomable odds developed into life that improves through the survival of the fittest over myriads of years until human beings evolved, then man is just the result of billions of accidents. And life is meaningless and worthless. If we are just an accident, we are just the result of things that evolved accidentally, and there was no purpose involved in it, there was no design involved in it, there's no meaning in life. Life is just worthless. How is it that the evolutionary trail that left behind no traces of undeniable facts that show us links between one creature and another? You know, they try to say all these missing links, but they're missing links because they're just plain missing. They're not there. There are no links between the human and the ape or even creatures. You know, there can be differences in the genetics, and God did that in a very powerful way, but there's nothing there showing evidence of something between any of the species that are there or the creatures that are there. And so it's very important for us to see that. The fossils and the bones show no undeniable forms of one creature evolving into another. Evolution contradicts the evidence. The evidence shows clear, distinct kinds all the way through. And that contradicts what they try to teach. On the other hand, creation can explain origins. In Genesis chapter 1, in verse number 20, we see there that, and God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly and moving creatures that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven. Verse number 24, we read, "And God said, let the earth bring forth living creatures after his kind, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth after his kind. And it was so." Verse number 26, "And God said, let us make man in our own image, after our own likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." And so God states clearly that he created all that exists. He created all the animals, he created all the fish, all the creatures that are in the sea. And the scriptures are full of verses like this. The book of Jeremiah has got a lot of verses on it. Isaiah has got a lot of verses on it. And Exodus says, all through the scriptures we find verses that deal with God's creation and how that God did that. And it is true that no human was present in the origins, and we admit that. But yet we've got what God wrote down for us as proof of what he said he did. And so our faith is based on God's word. Evolutionary theories are based on ideas. They're theories. They're postulates. They're not based on fact. And so God created everything that is living with design and full ability to multiply after its kind. We see all through the book of Genesis chapter 1 that it talks about their kind. In verse 21, we read there about he made them after their kind. And in verse 24, it was after their kind. Verse 25, it talks about the kind. And so each one of them was able to multiply after their kind. And very important truth there that things will multiply after their kind. And it was great to think that in those first creation days, God made those first two dogs that he created with all the genes in them to have the ability to produce all the different kinds of dogs that are in the world today. And so every kind of dog that came from those original dogs is genetically patterned in those first ones. But there was no genes in them to give them the ability to crossbreed with cats or cows or pigs or anything else. Only with dogs. And so dogs are in the dog family, and you can get lots of different kinds of dogs, from the wolf to coyote to the dingo and the all different kinds of dogs, even down to a poodle. All right, so you get all these different kinds of dogs that come from the original dogs because God put those genes in there for all those. And so it is with every kind of creatures that you can, even some of the ones that are somewhat horse related. You know, you can cross a donkey and a horse. But you get a mule, and the mule's sterile. And you can't go any further than that. You do get another creature. They're both horse-like. You look at it, and I mean, you ask a five-year-old kid what it looks like, and he's not going to tell you it looks like a cat. It looks like a horse. But it's still their kind, but it can't go any further than that because it wasn't made to reproduce in that way. You know, the design details and diversity seen in every part of the universe with the naked eye, with the microscope, and with the telescope, fits perfectly into the biblical creation model. That's, you know, we don't have to look beyond it. All we got to do is look out what we see. When you see the beautiful flowers and all the different kinds of flowers, it's just amazing to think of all the detail and the intricacy in all those things. And all the things that God designed to even make the flowers work and to pollinate. I was just noticing yesterday in my garden, some of the flowers that were in the garden, and the bees were busy flying around and pollinating them. And God planned all that. He planned the bees to be able to be there to get inside of there and to pollinate the flowers and to take the pollen to the next one. And all of that was perfectly designed by God. That's not, you can't explain that with evolution. You cannot explain that with a bunch of accidents and how the bee accidentally landed in the plant and accidentally got some pollen on him and accidentally flew to the next one and put some of the pollen on there. What do you know? They pollinated. But God had it all planned. And God made the bee for that specific purpose. And God made the flowers for that specific purpose. And so all the design and the detail and diversity, everything we see perfectly fits the creation model, but it does not fit the evolutionary model. They struggle to try to make excuses for these things and try to come up with ways to explain them. Genesis explains material origins. We see there in Genesis 1:1 the creation of the universe. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And you read through the rest of it, and it explains the details of it. But God made it all. And then we see the atmosphere in the solar system down in verses 14 to 18 as God describes his creation of that. Verse 14, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of heaven and to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of heaven and to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. And so God created all these things. He created the solar system and the atmosphere and all of that. God also created all the living creatures and man. We saw that in Genesis 1, verses 20 down through 27. We've already read many of those verses, and I won't take the time to reread them now. But God created all those things. Now, you know, even with dinosaurs, for a long time as a kid, I wondered, you know, where did the dinosaurs all fit in there? But, you know, the scriptures are very clear. God created everything. He created everything in those 6 days. And on the sixth day, before he created man, he created all the animals, including the dinosaurs. And, you know, the evolutionists say, oh, that couldn't be because the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. They don't know that. That's just their theory. There's no evidence of that. In fact, there's a lot of evidence to prove it contrary, because Christian scientists have found dinosaur bones that have cells in them that are not fossilized like the rest of them. And there's just too much evidence against that. And the truth is, God said that he created it all. In fact, even in the Bible, you read about the dragons and Leviathan and behemoths. And all of those seem so much like dinosaurs. You look at their description, it doesn't sound like elephants or rhinos or hippos or any of those other things that some of the commentators try to explain them away as. It doesn't fit the picture. And man, God made unique. You know, young people, you're going to be taught in school that man is an animal. Man is not an animal. Man is man. God made man unique. Man is not an animal. And God created man in his image. That is very important. God created us in his image. What does it mean that God created us in his image? Well, it has to do with the fact that God has made us to be able to enjoy language and creativity and love and holiness and immortality and freedom. You know, all of these things and much more are probably involved in the image of God. We are different than the animals. We're not part of those animals. And God, you know, if you want to read a good read on this, there's a good article in Genesis on Answers in Genesis on the being in the image of God. And I found some really good information on there. But God made us unique to the animals. We're not one of the animals. We're not just an advanced ape. We are made completely different. Now, Genesis explains also not only the material origins, but also social origins. You know, it talks about God making man distinctly male and female. And that's very important and crucial in our world today. He says there in Genesis 1:27, so God created man in his own image. In the image God created him, male and female created he them. God created both male and female. And God created it for them to reproduce as well. And then the origin of marriage. God ordained marriage. Genesis 2:24. Where God says, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. You know, Jesus also affirms this statement over in the New Testament, Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 and 5, and affirms that it was in the beginning that God created marriage and ordained marriage. So all of these things are extremely important to us to understand this. So there was the material origins and the social origins. You know, along with the social origins, there's also government. We see in chapter 9 of after the flood that God ordained that there would be human government, and that men would have to take the lives of others who killed someone for murder. And there was supposed to be capital punishment. And we see the government that God set up there in Genesis 9. Then also in Genesis chapter 11, there's the multiple languages. Prior to that, there was only one language. And then God divided the languages and at Babel. And so we have the record of all of that. You know, you look at evolution and say, well, how did that happen? Well, they just try to make excuses and say, well, you know, they got it separated and they started talking a little bit different. No, God made specific different languages. And God ordained that purposely to get man to separate and to spread throughout the whole earth. Then there was also spiritual origins. You know, many of those spiritual origins. You know, without the book of Genesis, how would we know where sin came from? How would we know any of those kind of things? You know, God tells us there in Genesis 2:17 that he told Adam and Eve, he says, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die." He says, do not eat of that tree. If you do, you're going to die. And Adam and Eve ate of that, and they didn't drop over dead. Did God lie? No. They did die. They died spiritually. And they lost their relationship with God that they had in their innocency. And they did begin to physically die, and eventually they did physically die. But God had warned them of that. We also see in Genesis 3:6 that by disobeying God, they brought sin into their own lives and sin into the world. And in verse number 6 of chapter 3, "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant to the eyes and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat and gave it also unto her husband and he with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons." They had sinned against God. They lost their innocence. You know, that was a very huge privilege to be perfect. Can you imagine that? Not to have a sin nature. That would be so wonderful. And one day we'll be able to get rid of our old sin nature when we go to heaven. But until then, we have to put up with the old sin nature that continually pulls us the wrong direction. Adam and Eve didn't have that, but they did have the freedom to make a choice. And they made a wrong choice. And as a result, they lost their innocence. And the result was that sin caused a curse upon the earth because of all that they had done. And God cursed the woman and gave her pain in childbirth, also gave her a desire to control her husband. And man then had God put within him the responsibility or duty to rule over his wife, to care for her. And so that's caused a lot of friction and problems. And we all know that. If you're married, you know there's friction there. All right? We all have our own ideas. And, you know, trying to harmonize in that can be trying at times. But then there was, for the man, there was sorrow in his work. You know, evidently before that, working out in the garden was a joy and a blessing. And apparently it didn't cause sweat because now he has to work with the sweat of his brow. There's thorns and thistles. Often wonder whether the thorns and thistles just were created after that or whether they somehow changed from what they were, because there weren't thorns and thistles before. And it was a miserable thing to have to deal with all those thorns and thistles now that we have them. And then there's physical death. And, you know, the thought of dying and no longer being alive as they once were. And, you know, then you read in chapter 4 of Cain killing Abel and the first recorded death of that sort. And, you know, sad situations, all because of the curse. And God promised then, though, a Redeemer. And we see just the embryo form of that in Genesis 3:15. "And I will put my enmity between thee and the woman, between thy seed and her seed, and it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel." And, you know, we believe that that is just obviously not very clear, but a very simple form of God saying, "I'm going to supply a Redeemer one day. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to provide for you." And God has ultimately done that through Jesus Christ. But all of this is foundational. If we didn't have any of this information, and we jumped right straight into the New Testament, that's all we had, how would we know any of this? How would we know what went wrong? How would we know where it all started? We need the book of Genesis. It is absolutely foundational to these things. But then one last reason I want us to note this morning, or this evening, is that Genesis is a trustworthy historical account. It is fascinating, and I mentioned this last week just briefly, it's fascinating to think that the book of Genesis covers approximately 2,400 years of history. That's more than one third of the world's history in the book of Genesis. That is amazing. That is amazing. And as you look at that, in that history, that God gives us so much information, and Moses is credited as the author of Genesis. The Jameson Fawson Brown commentator makes a statement. He says that the Mosaic origin of the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Bible, is established by concurring voices of both Jewish and Christian tradition, and their unanimous testimony is supported by the internal character and statements of the work itself. You know, throughout the Bible, God tells us that Moses wrote it, and that it was the books of Moses. In fact, in John chapter 1, verse number 45, Philip says that Philip findeth Nathanael and saith unto him, "We have found him whom Moses in the law and the prophets did write, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Moses and the prophets. Moses was accredited for writing this. And in Luke chapter 24 and verse 27, Jesus, remember, walking on the road to Emmaus with his two of his disciples and sharing with them and opening the scriptures. And he says, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, Jesus expounded unto them all in all the scriptures things concerning himself. From Moses and the prophets, and expounded unto them. Now, it appears that Moses probably used original documents to compile the book of Genesis. And the reason for this is because of some of the statements that are made in the book of Genesis. Henry Morris once again says that it is probable that these original documents can still be recognized by the key phrase, "These are the generations of." And you look throughout the book of Genesis and you find that over and over again around 10 or 11 times in the book of Genesis. These are the generations of. These are the generations of. And my notes on the web have got all the references there, and I won't take the time to read them all. But in those references, each one of those sections that start, "These are the generations of," are very important because, you know, if you ever read through the book of Genesis, you come to some of those sections and say, "This sounds weird. Why is he all of a sudden talking about dukes and all this kind of stuff?" You get to chapter 36 and you're really saying, "This doesn't sound like he's been going along. It's been kind of an interesting narrative." And then all of a sudden you've got to read through all these duke this and duke that and duke somebody else. And where did that come from? Well, it was because it was one of those sections that was written by the family of, I believe that was, well, I didn't write it in my notes here. I think it was Esau's family. The dukes were all these various dukes. And so it came from their family's background, some of their family history in there is all included in there. So each one of these, you see these divided up here into these different generations of. And evidently God told Moses to use these first-hand records as a basis for this great book. And, you know, that's significant to think that, you know, it wasn't just Moses sitting down and God says, "All right, now let me tell you a few things here." And he told him all these things and Moses writes it all down. I mean, that could have happened that way, but it doesn't explain why it says in there, "These are the generations of and these are the generations of." And each one of them was a little bit different. And each one of them had different descriptions. And, you know, even like in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, sometimes people laugh at them and say, "Well, why is there two creation stories here? One's in Genesis 1, one's in 2, and they're not quite the same." Well, the reason is because Genesis chapter 1 was probably God's rendition of what he did. And Genesis chapter 2 may have been more of Adam's rendition of what God did on that day. They're both the same event from two different perspectives. And so in Genesis chapter 1, it talks about God. In Genesis chapter 2, it talks about the Lord God. So it's presented from a different perspective. And so we have different perspectives here. And all the way through the book, we find this of these different indications that were probably different sources that were put together. And again, God was using that. It was not necessarily that those original sources were inspired at the time, but God used them and put them together, and Moses added them and put them into the book as God guided him through the inspiration of the Spirit of God. And so the book of Genesis is very important. And we've looked at several of these reasons. The first reason we noted here, that it identifies God as the creator of all. And if God's not the creator of all, we have a book that is telling us lies. God said he created everything. And throughout the book, the prophets say that he created everything. The psalmist says that. Jeremiah says that. Isaiah says that. In the New Testament it says that. And in John chapter 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. Without him was not anything made that was made." So the scriptures, from beginning to end, we find verses in there that say that God made it all. And then also, it is essential to biblical credibility, because if we cannot believe the Old Testament text of Genesis, then we don't have any assurance that any of it is true. And it is also explains many of the beginnings, not all the beginnings, but there's lots of beginnings. You go through the book of Genesis and start looking at all the beginnings. The first time there was first man and the first woman and the first children and the first sin and the first murder and the first government. And you just go through there's lots and lots and lots of firsts you find in the book of Genesis. Those origins and beginnings, we just looked at a few of them. And then the trustworthy historical account. All of these things are very good reasons for us to keep in mind when you study the book of Genesis to help to build our faith. The devil wants to undermine our faith. The devil wants us to question our faith and say, well, you know, maybe we can't really trust Genesis because, you know, how else are we going to get those billions and billions of years in there when God says he did it in 6 days? And they try to put doubt in our minds. And we need to just look to the scripture and say, listen, God has the answers. And God told us what was true. And we can believe and trust God. And it helps to fortify and build our faith. And I think that, you know, in my own heart and life, anytime the devil starts putting any kind of doubt in my mind, one of the greatest things to fortify my faith is creation. You look around us and say, it couldn't have happened by accident. There's no way on earth that could have happened by accident. There's too many details, too many intricacies, there's too many wonderful things out there in nature to possibly have happened by accident. Absolutely can't. And so it helps to build our faith. And so I challenge you tonight to let these things, the truths of the Word of God and the book of Genesis, to strengthen your faith and to say, I believe it because God said it, and it makes a whole lot more sense than all the silly things that the world is trying to tell us to try to make excuses to cover up what God said he did.